Welcome to Super Nerd Podcast, the adventure that brings you the latest nerd news and rumors from movies, TV, entertainment, and sometimes science. You name it, we are talking about it. Tonight, we're not doing this. I'm your host, Austin, and with me, as always, is the amazing Amanda.
Hey.
Hey, folks, thanks so much for joining us. Dune Part 2 is right around the corner, and so we are talking Dune Part 1 Rewind to get ready for Part 2. We're also talking, the sad news that Mandalorian actor Carl Weathers has passed away. We got a Beetlejuice sequel title and poster ready to go, and apparently Deadpool 3 will save the MCU and a whole lot more, so make sure to hit that podcast subscribe button. We would love to nerd out with you each and every week, and if you've already hit that podcast subscribe button, you know what I'm going to say to you. Plus 10 Nerd XP. We love you guys. And for everyone else, as soon as you hit that podcast subscribe button, you too can start earning Nerd XP. But in the meantime, Jekka, what's nerdy with you?
So this last week was the season finale of Percy Jackson. And I really liked it. I like this team. They did a fantastic job. I'm very biased because I absolutely love Percy Jackson. Like, it kicked me off to like reread the books and all that stuff. So I felt they did an excellent job of the storyline. Way better than the movie. I'm like, yes, thank you.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you haven't had a chance to watch it, please go watch it. We need everyone to watch it so that they will do season 2, season 3, season 4, and season 5. Because I'm not giving away any spoilers, but the thing I loved about this adaptation of Percy Jackson is they have set it up for the long game. There's a lot of things they drop in that I'm like, oh my gosh, that ties into the final book, like the final showdown. It's like, I love how they set it up. And they have it set up well that if for some reason Disney's dumb and doesn't like keep going with it, anyone who continues with the books will still like We'll enjoy it.
Wow.
I will explain to you what happened in my house and how that adds to what you were talking about. So my daughter invited one of her friends over to watch the Percy Jackson. Like the first episode, we had one girl come here. And the next, we had another girl come. So they had to rewatch all of the episodes they did watch. And slowly, week by week, they added one more girl.
Yes!
Had to rewatch. Multiple times.
Yes.
They rewatched the whole thing multiple times?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
For multiple girls, so that way they'd be caught up.
I want to go rewatch it again, but I just want to give myself some time to like stew it and relish it and enjoy it. And then I'm going to go right back and like binge it. I'm so excited. Binge it. Like, but it was one of those that was like the highlight of my week. Like, as no matter what was going on during the week, the angry times, the sad times, the happy times, I was just like, Percy Jackson, yes!
Is that Disney Plus?
Yes, Disney Plus. And they got like a lot of great actors and actresses. One of my favorite characters from Psych plays one of the gods, and I was just like, floored that he got that role. I was just like, awesome. And so, yeah.
So I don't know anything about Percy Jackson. Give me the 30-second elevator pitch, I guess.
So Percy Jackson, it's pretty much about like Greek. It ties into Greek mythology where there were demigods, which are children of gods with mortals, and Percy Jackson is a demigod. And he's been accused of stealing Zeus's thunderbolt. So he has to go on a quest to get it, but he hasn't stolen it. So he's trying to figure out who took it. And yeah.
Is it modern day?
It's modern day. And the whole thing about that is, as like the focus of Western civilization that was like back in the ancient times was Greece. As that moves around, the gods will move around too. So right now, Mount Olympus is in New York City. And the Camp Half-Blood is where the demigods go to be safe. And they train and learn how to fight monsters and all that.
And so his full name is Perseus.
Yeah, after the Greek hero.
Which is why he would be Percy.
Yeah.
Well, he could still be Percy Jackson, like I was saying earlier before the show.
Yeah, Perseus.
And I was laughing because the camp director is Dionysus, who's the god of wine, and he always says Percy's name wrong, so it cracks me up that they're, like, mispronouncing it deliberately.
Already.
Already, you're like, Mr. D.
All right, Brady, what's nerdy with you?
You know, just staying busy. Not a whole lot of time for nerd stuff. I did do some music nerding out. I had to restrain myself from picking up a new instrument the other day.
Okay.
I've been looking for an acoustic bass, and I found one. I'll occasionally just stop in, like, pawn shops that I might pass, like whenever driving around the Dallas area, just to see what they have. And I found this sweet little 5-string Ibanez acoustic bass. And I almost picked it up, but I'm like, man, I've got too much going on for my hobbies. I just don't want to. So I put it down. And then I turned around, I found a Breedlove 6-string guitar, and I was like, oh, I could get that instead. So I basically had to force myself out of there. And yeah. So, but no, I haven't had time to do any of my D&D crafts lately. I did pick up I was looking for another like little project thing. So they advertised this thing. It's an Arduino kit. It's called, 30 Days in Space. So I picked that up.
I'm getting that for my kids.
Yeah. I haven't started it yet. But I have it over there. I've been so busy with other like real life stuff, blah, blah, that I just haven't really
adulting.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Geez. Yeah, you'd think after 5 decades I'd be used to it, but no.
I hate adulting. I always have to reward myself for adulting. I'm like, Jackie, you did a very adult thing. It's time to reward yourself. And half the time lately, it's been Lego set.
Yeah.
I'm like, let's get nothing a Lego set.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that at all.
That's why they make adult Lego sets.
My favorite. Well, we could get that. Anyways, ones that I really like are the 3-in-1 creator sets.
Those are really fun.
All right, Amanda, what's nerdy with you?
So I took my daughter to
Did you just brain fart what it's called?
I'm trying to think of the type of school. It's
CEC.
It's called Cherry Creek Innovation Campus.
Oh, yes.
And it's a
it's a STEM school.
No, it's not a STEM school. It's a like hands-on school where kids get certificates that they can get real jobs straight out of high school that are better paying than just if you graduate with a high school diploma. It's a trade school.
That's what I was going to say. It was almost like, sounds like a trade school.
It is a trade school.
But like, really nice. Like, that's a cool trade school. Because normally it's like, you get those certificates after you graduate high school. But that's cool that she could do it like, as she's in high school.
So it's as she's in high school. And it's, they've got a manufacturing program that includes a BattleBots program.
Nice.
So you can learn how to make robots that way. They had an IT program where you learn how to program the robots. And they had like this like dog-shaped robot that they were working on programming that they were having jump and do all sorts of fun things. But then she was going into the airplane manufacturing, and that was what she was really interested in.
Very cool, actually.
I thought it was super nerdy, and we had a lot of fun walking through it. So that was my nerdy thing.
That is pretty cool.
All right. Well, I guess we've got some nerd news that we need to talk about. Let's get into it.
Many Bothans died to bring us this information.
Ooh. And what is the news that should be on your nerd radar? Well, unfortunately, Mandalorian actor Carl Weathers, Apollo Creed, has passed away. That's right. The entertainment industry mourns the loss of a legendary figure, Carl Weathers, who passed away at 76, renowned for his memorable portrayal of Apollo Creed in the Rocky series. Weathers made a significant mark in Hollywood with his dynamic performances, becoming emblematic of his cinematic career. His family shared a poignant message regarding his passing. Quote, "We are deeply saddened to announce the passing of Carl Weathers. He died peacefully in his sleep on Thursday, March 1st, 2024. Carl was an exceptional human being who lived an extraordinary life. Through his contributions to film, television, the arts, and sports, he has left an indelible mark and is recognized worldwide and across generations. He was a beloved brother, father, grandfather, partner, and friend." End quote. Yeah, the career of Carl Weathers in Hollywood is distinguished by his adaptability and brilliance beyond his iconic role in Rocky, engaging in epic bouts with Sylvester Stallone that enthralled audiences globally. Weathers demonstrated his acting range across diverse roles. He portrayed an elite mercenary in Predator, battling an extraterrestrial foe, which solidified his place as an action hero. His work extended to other memorable roles, including Greef Karga in The Mandalorian, and Chubbs Peterson in Happy Gilmore, showcasing his comedic talent. Moreover, he featured in Action Jackson and contributed to more than 75 films and TV series over his career. Carl Weathers was not only a cultural icon, but also a figure known for his kindness, philanthropy, and guidance to many within the entertainment sphere. Though Carl's was departed from us early, his legacy and his memory he forged will be eternally cherished by those who admired his work. And we extend our deepest sympathies and thoughts to his loved ones during this time. Bummer.
Yeah, I was really sad about that. I just remember him most from Mandalorian. But then I was looking up his filmography, and he was in an episode of Psych, which is my favorite TV show. And I was sitting there. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't remember what part he played. Like on IMDb, it did say the character's name, but I was like, I don't remember that person. So I'm like, I guess I'm going to have to watch Psych again, you know? But
he'll always be Chubbs Peterson to me. He was so perfect. No,
that is sad. Condolences to his family and friends. He was a great actor.
Sad, but you know, he's really one of the, I think one of the marks I don't want to say a great performer, but an endearing performer to the masses is that, you know, he always left a mark wherever he was at. His characters are always identifiable, and he had a warmth about him. And I didn't realize he was 76 years old. And I mean, it makes sense, you know, looking at it, but he had a life well lived. And I think that all of the stuff he did, you know, is worthy of celebration. And it's a big loss.
Yeah.
But I think he had I'm a big believer in, you know, love never dies. It just kind of changes shape. So, you know, I think he's given a lot of himself that people will carry on with them for generations.
Mm-hmm. So I really liked his Greef Karga character from Mandalorian. What happens moving forward? Because they just announced that they're going to be doing a Mandalorian movie. I'm sure when they were thinking about this, like they've got ideas for Greef Karga. Do they just
he is a pretty he's a pretty major character in that. Yeah. Like,
I would almost say he's like the third major character.
Yeah, and you know, that's the other thing that I just, you know, liked about Carl Weathers' performance of him is he went from someone that you're kind of like, can we trust you? I don't know, to like a very likable character that you know, when he walks on screen, you're like, yes, Greef Karga. I don't know, because I mean, they're probably going to have to recast, which is sad.
You think they're going to recast, or you think they're just going to pretend Greef Karga doesn't exist anymore? They're just going to write him out of his, write his character out altogether.
They might kill his character and basically create a new character to do what he needed to do.
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning that way. I mean, you don't just take someone who held a place like Carl Weathers did, both in that series and in the cultural awareness of cinema or the show or whatever, and recast or just write them off. You've got to give them a story.
Maybe it'll be like Chadwick Boseman.
Yeah.
Him. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on. An early Sonic 3 teaser has been released. That's right. The excitement is building for Sonic the Hedgehog 3 as a newly released promotional teaser unveils the film's logo. Excitingly, reports confirm Jim Carrey will be returning to embody the role of the eccentric Dr. Robotnik. Once again, a role that has easily won fans over. The conclusion of the second Sonic movie saw Dr. Robotnik plummeting from a massive robot, seemingly to his demise. However, a post-credit twist left Dr. Robotnik's fate open, as his body was never discovered, hinting at his comeback in the upcoming installment. The teaser trailer intriguingly concludes with a laugh, which is sparking speculation among fans, because rumors say that Hayden Christensen, aka Anakin Skywalker, will be voicing Shadow in the upcoming movie. And so when we get a chance to listen to this, listen and tell me, do you think that's Hayden Christensen laughing? It kind of sounds like it. What do you think? But Pat Casey, the film's co-writer, has previously expressed that Shadow's inclusion in the franchise was driven by his popularity and the unique dynamics he could introduce to the narrative. Describing Shadow as motivated by vengeance and anger, Casey notes a distinct difference from Knuckles, as Shadow does not share the same misunderstanding, but instead is focused on protecting the world, albeit through questionable methods. Casey elaborated on the complex dynamics awaiting Sonic, stating, quote, "Sonic's never had to deal with someone as emotionally damaged like Shadow. When he sees Shadow, he's like, well, I'm just teach him about the power of friendship like with Knuckles. But that's not going to work on Shadow." Shadow's backstory, if you don't know, is marked by the loss of his friend Maria to Gunn, set a foundation for potential alliances and conflicts, hinting at potentially darker tones for Sonic the Hedgehog 3. This setup suggests a nuanced narrative that fans are keen to explore. Mark your calendars for December 20, 2024 for the release of Sonic the Hedgehog 3. All right, let's take a listen to this and tell me if it sounds like Hayden Christensen. Here we go. All right.
I would say that's Hayden Christensen.
Sounds like it.
Definitely sounds like it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember what he sounded like when he laughed, so I'm just like, sounds like an evil laugh. Maniacal laugh.
Okay.
I'm just excited.
Bless you, Brady.
I sneeze on that
movie, and I'm so excited for December 20th because my kids really, really, really like the Sonic movies.
Yeah, they've always been pretty fun. I don't know, Brady, is it Hayden?
I think so. The reason I say that is because I just watched the last of Ahsoka, so I've got like this week, and I've got his voice fresh in my mind. I think,
yeah.
I mean, that'd be cool. He'd make a great Shadow.
I'm looking forward to this. You know, the Sonic movies are one of those movies that you can just have fun watching. Like, you don't need to,
no expectations.
You just go in and have fun, and Jim Carrey just nails it. Sonic's a fun character, fun movie, so. All right, moving on. The Beetlejuice sequel officially has a title, and a poster has officially been revealed. So Warner Brothers has unveiled a teaser poster for Tim Burton's eagerly awaited Beetlejuice sequel, confirming the film's title as Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, And its premiere is set for September 6, 2024. The sequel's name intriguingly suggests the possibility of a trilogy, considering the iconic rule of summoning Beetlejuice by repeating his name three times. This choice in title sparks speculation about a future third installment. The film will see the return of Michael Keaton in his iconic role, alongside Winona Ryder reprising her role as Lydia Deetz. The cast also includes Jenna Ortega playing Lydia's daughter, best known for Wednesday. I just forgot it all of a sudden. Apparently, William Dafoe will even be in this movie as a spectral law enforcement officer in the netherworld. So Michael Keaton, sharing his enthusiasm for the project, stated, quote, "Beetlejuice is the most effing fun you can work. You can have working. It's so fun. It's so great. And you know what it is? We're doing it exactly like we did the first movie. There's a woman in the great waiting room for the afterlife, literally with a finishing line. I want people to know this because I love it. Tugging on the tail of a cat to make it move." Harris Zambarkos, the film's cinematographer, revealed the sequel's thematic focus on family. Quote, "At its heart, Beetlejuice 2 is a story about family, and now it's 30 years later, and what are the intricacies in the human condition in keeping a family together all that time, set in the craziest world possible? That's why I choose projects. The human connection for me is always at the forefront." So Beetlejuice 2 is scheduled to hit theaters September 6, 2024. What do you think of this, Brady?
You know, I didn't know what to think about it, really. It's like, you know, it's kind of like a sequel nobody asked for that I had ever heard of. But the more I hear about it, the more I'm interested in it. I mean, they're bringing back, obviously,
the ghost with Michael Keaton.
Yeah, they're bringing, I mean, because there's no one else that could pull that role off. There's absolutely no one. The fact that Winona Ryder is going to be involved again shows continuity from the first story. Jenna Ortega, I mean, you don't really have to say anything there. She's perfect for that. You know, especially if they're going to emulate the Winona Ryder vibe from the first film. I'm interested in seeing this. The Beetlejuice verse, the Beetleverse, the juice verse,
yeah,
whatever it is, isn't something I ever thought I would, you know, entertain in my mind. But yeah, I mean, why not? You know, they brought back Ghostbusters. To a lesser extent, brought back Michael Keaton's Batman. But I mean, what more can you say with what we know, and more importantly, what we don't know? How can you look at this with some anticipation? You know,
I love the poster, because if you remember from the first movie, Beetlejuice is sitting in the afterlife, and he's got that incredibly long, ticket for when he's next in line. And in the poster, I'll have a link to it in the show notes, but the poster basically has Beetlejuice's hands. He's holding that long ticket, and the ticket says 090624 for September 6, 2024. It's a good poster.
Yeah, it's pretty clever.
Beetlejuice. I don't know about the title, though. But I don't know. It makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, I just hope they don't rinse and repeat the same story, you know?
Yeah.
Sure.
I think that's really the only concern I would have about it. But, I mean, you know, everything's conjecture until we know more.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of clever, instead of saying, like, Beetlejuice 2 or Beetlejuice some new subtitle, it's just Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's growing on me.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, let's move on. Deadpool 3 apparently will save the MCU. Deadpool 3 stands as the Marvel Studio project that fans are eagerly anticipating, promising fresh and distinctive experience in a period where superhero movies face the challenge of audience fatigue. Deadpool 3 is seen as a beacon of originality. Matthew Vaughn, the director behind X-Men First Class, expressed his optimism for the project's impact on the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the MCU, during a conversation with Bro Bible, stating, quote, That's going to be the jolt. The Marvel Universe is about to have a jolt of them, and it's going to bring that body back to life. I think Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman are about to save the whole Marvel Universe, end quote. Vaughn also expressed his desire for Deadpool 3 to pave the way for the X-Men integration into the MCU, highlighting his passion for the series, quote, I'm a genuine fan of the X-Men. All I want is for the movies to be as good as they should be, end quote. The film synopsis, the official synopsis, teases a game-changing role for Deadpool and Wolverine with the MCU, quote, that crazy irresponsible hero Deadpool will change the history of the MCU with Wolverine, end quote. That one sentence is the film synopsis. So the release of Deadpool 3 is set for July 26, 2024, promising to inject new life into the superhero genre.
So the problem with pinning all their hopes on Deadpool saving the MCU is that Deadpool, as cool and awesome as Deadpool is, cannot do it alone. They have to fix their writers. They have to fix how they present superhero movies. That gets rid of superhero movie fatigue. I really loved the latest Guardians of the Galaxy movie. It was fantastic. I didn't feel the superhero fatigue when I went to see it. But that didn't take away the superhero fatigue when I hit Ant-Man. So yeah. This pinning all their hopes on Deadpool is really misguided.
Well, like Deadpool's his own thing, too. He's his own thing. He's always been his own thing. Like, I don't know. Yeah, no. Because, yeah, I agree. I mean, the latest Echo, like, that's why I enjoyed Echo, because I didn't feel superhero fatigued with that. Moon Knight, too. Loved yeah. Moon Knight. Didn't feel superhero fatigue. And then I've been rewatching all Daredevil. That's not superhero fatigue either. You know, I mean, yeah, that came before. That was all Netflix and Marvel doing, but yeah, it was like...
Yes, I think superhero fatigue comes from lazy writing.
Yeah.
Lazy writing, well, jokes that are like, I don't know, done jokes. I don't know, yeah.
Templated superhero movies is what the MCU has turned
Formulaic.
That's it,
And I do find it interesting. I'm sure we're going to talk some Daredevil a little bit later, too. But I find it interesting that you're saying, Jekka, that you've got MCU superhero fatigue, but you went back, started watching Daredevil, and you don't feel that. Because it's not formulaic and templated.
Well, it's not. What's sad is I actually read an article that explained everything I didn't like about Echo. And part of it was formula, and they had a formula in it that removes me from it. And like, so there are things that they did in Echo that changed their formula a bit, but they didn't change it enough to keep me invested in it. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the formula for Deadpool is probably similar to a New York City bathroom wall. There's going to be a lot of graffiti everywhere, and you'll probably get some sort of disease if you touch it for too long. So
that's why it works.
And that's why it works. Yes. So, all right, let's move on. James Gunn's Superman movie will skip the origin story. James Gunn, the writer and director of Superman Legacy, was recently queried on Threads about the extent to which Superman origin story would feature in the movie. His succinct reply was none. Given the widespread familiarity with Superman's backstory, Gunn's decision to forego the traditional origin... Amanda, as you move, the whole computer moves. Now I've got to find my spot. Given the widespread familiarity, the Superman's backstory... Gunn's decision to forego the traditional origin narrative aligns with his vision for an already established Superman within the evolving DC universe. This move away from retelling the superhero's beginnings reflects a broader trend in superhero cinema towards more dynamic storytelling. Opting to bypass the origin story allows for an immediate deep dive into the superhero's world and challenges, circumventing the often predictable setup seen in many superhero films. This strategy not only offers audiences a fresh entry point into the character's life, but also opens up space for exploring more intricate themes and character development from the get-go. This approach enables the exploration of the superhero complexities and personal growth in depth, potentially leading to a richer cinematic experience. It provides an avenue for focusing on the development of secondary characters and plots. Moreover, sidestepping the well-known origin story could rejuvenate viewer interest, presenting a novel perspective on the iconic character and keeping the series vibrant. The film aims to depict Superman's quest to balance his Kryptonian roots with his upbringing in Smallville, Kansas, embodying ideals of truth, justice, and the American way. Scheduled for a July 11, 2025 release, Superman Legacy is set to kickstart the cinematic segment of DC Studios' Gods and Monsters Part 1.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, look, I get it, and it makes sense, right? We've seen the Superman origin story over and over and over, and it's been retold a million times, or at least every time it's retold. I mean, there's a very good case for skipping it, but at the same time, I just don't know about this whole reintroduction of Superman altogether. I don't know. Maybe I'm a little jaded. Maybe I'm a little confused because.
Sorry.
No. Maybe
that was the dog.
Confused because, you know, and you will. You need to mark this down because Henry Cavill was perfect for that role.
What?
So yeah, and I'm just like,
we have that on record. You
know, yeah, and it's now it's like now we got to go through this all again, right? You know, I don't know. I'm just kind of done with that. I'm just, you know what? Tell the story. Don't tell the story. I really don't care. It's either going to be a good movie or it's not. And I don't think that the origin story or just picking up and going is going to have an impact on that. You know, they'll have to refer to the origin story at some point if they're reflecting back to Smallville, right? I mean, they're going to have to refer to the origin story. So which one are they going to use? Who knows?
Yeah, my thoughts.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, you can't really say you're not going to do an origin story with a reboot without tying back to the origin story, which is like somehow with Superman, that always ends up taking over or becoming like a secondary storyline, you know? So, yeah.
Well, it's kind of like doing a proper debate where one of the most important things you do is you define definitions of all your terms. Everyone knows what the words mean, but you want to define what they mean to you. And so they have to define his origin story for what it means to this character.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, which kind of goes full circle. What is that origin story? You know, if we don't have one, that's going to make it a little more complicated.
And are they going to be able to do a refresh on that origin story instead of letting that origin story tag along, you know?
Yeah, you know, this is going to sound weird. I think I have more faith in James Gunn getting the DCU up and running than I have necessarily in the character of Superman getting the DCU running up and running.
Yeah.
Because anybody can screw up a Superman story, but James Gunn, like he I think he gets it. And so I'm cautiously optimistic, and I'm holding my excitement in reserve. We'll see if it comes out in July of 2025. But moving on, Daredevil Born Again photo confirms big Kingpin plot thread. So an emerging image from the production of Marvel's Daredevil Born Again has disclosed a significant plot development involving Vincent D'Onofrio's character, Wilson Fisk, also known as Kingpin. So a prop newspaper featured on the set, the New York Criterion, reveals a storyline that sees Fisk actively engaged in a political campaign for mayor Its headline declares, Wilson Fisk campaign gains momentum heading into polls. This suggests the upcoming narrative will draw inspiration from the Devil's Reign storyline within Marvel Comics, aligning with prior speculation. Vincent D'Onofrio has previously discussed this narrative angle, highlighting the complexities and appeal of Fisk's political ambitions. Think the idea of Fisk as mayor is a big idea. The corruption, of course, comes to mind. There is a million different ways to play that. And for me to play Wilson Fisk in these different situations is just a blast. I play him in domestic situations and in this kind of good and evil stuff. And then now I get a chance to play him as mayor. He's a really interesting character to bring into all these kinds of environments and scenarios. He's not a normal guy. And so it gets more specific and detailed because I approach him as a human being in these different environments, end quote. The narrative of Devil's Reign delves into the intricate relationship and conflict of power between Kingpin and the vigilantes who oppose him. It particularly focuses on the rival between Daredevil and Wilson Fisk as he assumes the mayoral office of New York City. Fisk leverages his political position to initiate a severe crackdown on vigilantes, declaring their actions illegal. This escalates into an intense battle between Kingpin and Daredevil, with the latter using every means at his disposal to pursue and destroy Daredevil and his allies, end quote. All right, Jekka.
So, yes, those of you just cluing in, I am finally, after many years, watching Daredevil for the first time. Echo put me onto it. And, now I can be excited about this kind of news because it's been floating around for a little bit and I've been like, oh, okay, cool. Another Daredevil's TV series. Sweet. Well, now I'm just like, okay, yes. But I just finished season 2, started season 3, got confused. So now I'm watching Defenders. just jumping into that because I was like, okay, I need to know what happens before season 3 began. Anyways, and my biggest concern goes back to Echo, in that in Echo, I felt like Kingpin was like on a leash. Like it wasn't, he wasn't to his full potential as he was now that I've seen Daredevil. And that's kind of my concern with this, is that they won't make it like the Daredevil, the previous seasons. And it really needs to be that to be good, because that's what I've been really enjoying about Daredevil. Is it's embodying the parts of like human conflict that I like from Batman. Like Daredevil and Batman, I'm like, holy cow, they are very similar, where they're like, I will not take a life, but man, their enemies are pushing them to that brink, you know?
Mm-hmm.
No spoilers, please. Anyways, and that's what I really like about Batman. And so like Daredevil, I'm like, wow, okay, here's a character I really like from the MCU now. But that only works because Daredevil, like Kingpin in those shows, in the series, is able to push Daredevil to that point, you know? Mm-hmm. And for this Daredevil Born Again to really work, they need to let Kingpin do that. And especially if he's going to be mayor, like, first of all, I had a feeling that was going to happen at the end of Echo. Because there was that mid-credit scene in Echo where it's like talking about the new mayor of New York. They need someone new. And it's just like, oh, Kingpin's going to go for it. So I'm like, sweet. Yes, I want to see Kingpin go for mayor. Sounds like he'll get that. He'll get voted as mayor. And I'm like, please, I want to see that. But he cannot be on a leash. It needs to be true Daredevil for this to be good, you know?
Brady, what do you think? I know you're a huge Daredevil fan.
Yeah, so all I'm thinking about, man, every time, I don't have a lot of forethought on the upcoming one. I think they're going to maintain the grittiness level. I'm not finished with Echo yet, but I've got 2 episodes left. I think they're going to maintain the grittiness with what's coming up, and I would like to see Kingpin. I don't know how it ends up in Echo with him, but I'm with you in that I'd like to see, I mean, because Kingpin is a dark character and just having him unbridled would be, I think it's necessary for the narrative of Daredevil to continue forward. But I gotta be completely honest with you. When Jekka was telling me she's just now watching Daredevil, I get caught up in, you know, my thoughts on Daredevil. By the way, season three, phenomenal season, Jekka.
Okay, and yeah, because season two, I was like, I like the Punisher storyline of season two, but Elektra was like, can we get rid of, like, can we get rid of that? That was really annoying. I wanted to focus on the Punisher side of it.
I think that, well, and you can watch the Punisher too. Punisher's phenomenal.
The Punisher is excellent.
The and then, you know, you can watch Luke Cage if you want, and then Jessica Jones is good. It's
I was going to finally get around to Jessica Jones since that's my name.
And then I think there was another one nobody talks about.
Skippable.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I heard. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's really great in the same way that watching golf on a Sunday afternoon is great. You need a nap. Perfect show.
So when I need to work on my thesis, turn it on. Got it.
Yeah. I still think that one of my favorite monologues ever in any television series I've watched, it's got to be top five, if not top two, is season two, episode, it's either four or six, I think it's episode six of Daredevil, when John Bernthal's Punisher is leaning against that tombstone and he talks about just being tired and being.
Yes.
I mean, like, it is an emotional delivery, unlike almost any monologue in any television series I've ever watched. It's phenomenal, and it still raises the hairs on my arm when I watch it, because it's just so good.
And thank you, because I was kind of worried that season three would be a little bit like season two. So thank you for easing my fears on that. I said, watching Defenders, so I understand where it's going into. So
I'm just gonna point out, because I'm realizing I can't believe you haven't seen Jessica Jones yet, and like that just didn't cross my mind. But David, I haven't gotten around to it. Best performance.
I know. Is in Jessica I Jones. Know. I know. I just never got around to it. And I still, to this day, so you all know, because when I go to like restaurants or like you know, I prefer Jekka, but when I'm at restaurants, they always end up saying Jackie. So I just say Jessica. When I have to do more formal things, you know, it says Jessica Jones. And even to this day, I still get people like, so have you seen it? What do you think? Does anyone give you crap? Like, anyone ask you about that? I'm like, yes. Yes, they do. It's for that reason I wish I had dark hair so I could, like, pull her off.
Like, yeah, you might want to watch that series before you go too deep in Just saying.
So, yeah.
All right, I think it's time for our main event.
We had our honeymoon on Alderaan.
Good thing we took pictures, huh?
Shut up, Wesley.
You have no idea what you're dealing with.
Shakespeare in the Park.
And at Bell Meet, it is time for our main event! Dune! Part 1! Rewind!
There's something happening to me. There's something awakening in my mind. I can't control it.
What did you see?
There's a crusade coming.
Do you often dream things that happen just as you dream them?
Yes.
The test is simple. Remove your hand from the box, and you die.
What's in the box?
Pain. You inherit too much power. You have proven you can rule yourself. Now you must learn to rule others. Something none of your ancestors learned.
My father rules an entire planet.
He's losing it.
He's getting a richer one.
He'll lose that one too. Arrakis is a death trap.
Kill him. This is an extermination.
They're picking my family off one by one.
Let's fight like demons.
An animal caught in a trap will gnaw off its own leg to escape. What will you do?
I know you.
One day, the legend will be born. All of civilization depends on it.
The future. I can see it. I must not fear. Fear is the mind killer.
My Lord Duke.
Where the fear is gone, only I will remain.
Go, go, go!
Hey, special shout out to all you super nerds who have hit that podcast subscribe button. We really, really appreciate you. Please help us get the word out and tell a friend about the podcast. I want to invite you to hit that podcast subscribe button if you've not done so already. Come on, do it. You'll get plus 10 nerd XP. All right. Who's excited for Dune Part 2?
Me. Pick me.
Yeah.
In the interest of full candor, I did not look at what the main event was tonight when I joined the call. So I did not rewatch Dune Part 1. And I have not read the books. So I'm not going to have as much to contribute to this conversation as you would probably like. However, the short bit that I will say is that trailer looks freaking phenomenal. I go back
for
and I think about
part 2 or part 1?
For part 2.
Oh, yes.
I think about the David Lynch one, you know, the old one.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the 70s I see this, or 80s. And when it shows those sandworms just coming over, I told my wife, I was like, that's a theater visit. That's not going to be wait till it hits streaming and then watch it. That is a trip to the theater.
No,
right there.
So I have read the book. I've read it twice now because earlier in January when I was going to a conference, my friend who I was carpooling with, he was reading Dune. He was listening to the audiobook. And so, like, it was funny because he was like, is it okay if we listen to this? I was like, go for it. And I was like, dude, like, audiobooks keep me awake, so let's listen. I want to listen to
it.
And then when he finished, he came over, like, a week after he finished it, and we watched it together. And, you know, it was both of us, our one complaint about part one is that it doesn't do the Baron's Mentat justice. Piter is how I've been pronouncing it. Because in the book, when, spoiler alert, question mark, when Piter dies, like, it is just the best feeling ever. It's like, finally, he's gone! And you just don't get that in the movie. It's been a long time since I've seen the 80s one. If you want to know the story behind that, I will gladly tell it. That's something I told my friend that was like, okay, I'm going to have you watch this just because it's so cheesy and corny. It's good old 80s with sandworms. And then there's Sting as Fade Rautha, which is just like, cannot get that out of my head. Yes. But I'm so excited for part two because in the book, Brady, by the way, when you ever read the book, part two is going to cover all the best parts of Dune. So I'm like super stoked for it. Cause like all of that part that they're going to go into I'm just so excited for. Cause that was all the parts of the book. That was second half of the book is my absolute favorite part.
I might add that to my audiobook selection. I've caught up on my podcast and I just finished listening to Moby Dick. And then I'm listening to All the Light We Cannot See right now, and I'm kind of wondering what's next. And I think that I might add Dune to that if I can. When is the release date on this again? Do we know?
March 1st.
March 1st.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'll be able to get. I mean, because Dune's pretty substantial as far as the book's concerned, right?
It is, yeah. It's yeah. a very thick book. It was one of those, I enjoyed it. I'm pretty sure I enjoyed it because one of my really good friends recommended it to me. And he also gave me a heads up about it, that the author likes to focus a lot on the politics. And if there's mm-hmm. any battles, it's because it's like, it's a direct result, like an immediate result of the politics. But like, he'll just kind of say like, oh, there was this battle, there was this going on, but he won't focus on the battles. And then there'll be like time gaps. So there'll be gaps where it's like a year past, 2 years, 3 years, that kind of thing. Mainly a big one. Like the biggest one is like, there's a 3 year gap kind of thing. But like, it was that little warning that he gave me. And like a lot of, and the writing style too is very, he just tells the story and you're kind of like picking out, like building the world from what he's saying. He's not just like straight up saying, this is what this is like. You get it from the conversations and interactions.
Okay.
So it was like that heads up really helped me read Dune because it's like I knew what to expect. The other big thing too that was a little jarring for me, but I got used to it, is that in mid-paragraph, it will switch point of view from one character to another in mid-paragraph. So you got to kind of like be aware of that. But otherwise,
So
highly recommend it. Those are just the key things to like be aware of, but it's still great. Yeah.
Funny story about Dune is that my grandfather hated science fiction and was adamant that science fiction was like the most terrible literature ever written. And somehow my brother convinced my grandfather to read Dune, and he had to reassess his entire opinion about science fiction.
Because it really, it doesn't read like a sci-fi novel. It's not like Star Wars. It's not like Star Trek or any of those other ones.
To it. There's that,
the politics is intriguing. Like it kept me, it was gripping. The politics is gripping. And that's,
Yeah, I'm going to add that to the list.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. It's really good. And that's what I really like about Dune Part 1 is that it's a very good adaptation of the book.
Yes.
It stays very true to what's going on. Yeah, they had to adjust some things. Yeah, Piter didn't quite get as front stage, which may have been for the best. I don't know. I just know I absolutely hated the guy, and I was glad he was dead, but you didn't really get that in the movie. Like, he's not even mentioned by name in the movie. It's just one of those characters where, like, if you read the book, you know who he is, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I really liked about it is they didn't rush Dune Part 1.
Yes.
They didn't rush to all of the action that's going to be happening in Part 2. They kept it. They needed all of that building to make sense of Part 2. I was talking with my son, and he was very much, he didn't want to watch it because it's so boring. And it's because he doesn't understand that it's a buildup.
Yeah. 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 It lays down the politics so that you can really appreciate the stuff that unravels in Dune Part 2, which, honestly, the trailer for Dune Part 2 actually makes me angry because some of my favorite parts they show in the trailer, and I'm like, no, save that for the movie. I'm like, don't show that. Ugh.
So, well, I'm excited to see Florence Pugh playing the princess.
Yes.
I'm so excited for that.
Why?
Yes. Princess Arulan.
I would explain why, but then you yell at me for spoilers. It is a huge spoiler.
Okay.
And who's playing the Padish? And another great actor is playing the Padishah Emperor, right? I want to say Christopher Walken. Is it Christopher Walken? Yeah. I'm excited for that too. I was like, But yeah.
The Emperor.
Yeah, Florence Pugh is Princess Arulan. Mm-hmm. That's going to be so good.
I can't believe it went up that quick.
I'm so excited.
What was that, Brady?
Oh,
I can't believe it's coming up so quickly.
Yeah.
Well, it's coming out late.
It should have come out like months ago.
It was supposed to come out Christmas.
At least. Okay, I will share the story. Here's how I watched the 1980s Dune. So I heard that Dune Part 1 was coming out. It was like 2020. I was like, okay, this is, I saw the trailer. I was like, oh my gosh, that looks good. So I read the book and I was so excited for the movie. And then because of COVID, they're like, we're going to push it back. And I was like, okay, maybe they'll push it back a month or two. No, they pushed back almost a whole year. I was so mad. I walked into work, walked over to my coworker, gave me Dune, and I was like, they pushed it back a year. And he was like, whoa, what's going on? And I told him, and I was like, I'm so mad. I was cranky that day. Like, I had a bullet to clear when students came in. I was so mad. And I was mad enough that I watched the 1980s movie. And I feel like I'm glad I did, but at the same time, I'm like, that's just how desperate I was for some Dune that I watched that because I was like, I need Dune.
What you need to understand is that's not nearly as desperate as watching the move, the TV adaptation that
Sci-Fi Channel, the
Sci-Fi
right?
Channel yeah. made.
I and almost
they
looked
shot
that up and
everything. In a room, and they have like a painted background scene that you can tell it's painted.
Oh my gosh. See, I almost, the only reason I didn't get around, I wasn't able to watch the TV show because I was on the verge of going to the TV show too. But there was, I couldn't find it anywhere. There's nowhere to find it. And I was like, fine, I'll just sit here and be angry at COVID.
Yeah. So just to share with you, I was desperate enough to watch the TV show because I didn't even have a hint of the movie coming. Like, there was no movie coming back when I read the book.
I like that 80s one. I got to be honest with you.
The 80s one is good.
It's
the Sci-Fi Channel. Yeah. Terrible.
Yeah, I mean, like, Patrick Stewart, like I said, you know, Sting as Fade Ralpha, that's just... I can never get that scene out of my head, but yeah, it's like it's good. It's just these memories all wrapped up in my frustration of having no Dune because of COVID.
I don't know what they're called, but I hope like the audio guns in Dune Part 2 sound as cool as they did in Dune 1980 movie. I thought
the
it sounded as, well, like they go and like they shoot the things.
That was all the 80s thing.
Yeah.
That was not in the book.
What? All right, so you're telling me I'm not amazing. I'm not gonna get that in Dune Part 2.
No.
That was one of the things that made me laugh when I saw the 80s one. I was just like, what are they doing? Like, what is this?
I like those things.
Because in cool. that it's like the idea behind it was Paul figured out a way to harness the voice as a weapon and was teaching it to the Fremen. So they were harnessing the voice, which is like a Bene Gesserit thing, that he was teaching it to the Fremen and they were weaponizing it. But that's not in the book. No. Sorry to your hopes and dreams.
That
but
yeah, I haven't read the book. And
you get lots
and that
of Shai Hulud.
That's what I was looking forward to the most in Dune Part 2, and now we're not going to get it!
Sorry.
I have no idea what to expect in Dune Part 2, because it's been such a long time since I've seen the 80s movie. So
there will be war.
There will be lots of sandworms.
Now, I do remember the sandworms. Those things were
cool. Yeah. That's the part I'm all excited for, is the sandworms.
Well, I mean, they're obviously setting this up for Dune Messiah, the third movie.
Yes.
So, but in the books, isn't there a book between the first Dune book and Dune Messiah?
No, it goes right to, or and if there is, I haven't read it yet. Because
there's Dune Messiah, and then Children of Dune.
Children of Dune. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, Dune Messiah takes place 12 years after the events of Dune. I actually like Dune Messiah more. I really enjoyed that one. I really liked that one. That was a good sequel. Even if it had its little plot holes in it, but yeah.
I've heard most people like Dune Messiah better than Dune.
Yeah, it was just like a really cool take on it. Because it's 12 years after Paul's, like, spoilers again, Brady.
That's good.
Yeah, like Paul's, you know, he's emperor of the known universe kind of thing. And so he's just like, collecting. Yeah, so he's like emperor of the known universe, but there's a conspiracy to take him down because the Padishah emperor and like the mother, Helena,
the Bene Gesserit mother.
Yeah, the Bene Gesserit mother and even Princess Arulan, they want to take him out. And that's what Dune Messiah revolves around, is like this conspiracy to assassinate him.
So I decided to look up Dune Messiah on Google. And the first question that is asked by apparently most people is, what is the point of Dune Messiah? It doesn't sound very good.
And like, well, the thing about Dune Messiah is it's kind of like it puts Paul in this more of a tyrant role, but he's like, because it's like he's on the other side of this holy war that he's had all these visions of while he was in Dune. And he's on the other side of that, looking back on it and being like, I wish I could have prevented it. Like, I have become that monster. And so I really like that because, like, it kind of puts him, it makes him more human in a way. Like, that's what I really liked about it, is because in the first book, you're like, yeah, Paul, he's the hero. And then you're on the other side and you're like, yeah, there's all this terrible stuff still happening. Like, there's still slavery, when it's like you think he would have tried to end that because of his friend Gurney Halleck. Because of Gurney. Gurney was a slave of the Harkonnens, and then Paul's dad freed him. But, so he's, like, looking back on, like, this decade of bloodshed that he was the cause of it. And so that's what I really liked about it. It was like more political intrigue, but like with Paul.
Paul is the center of it. He wants to make Dune Messiah.
Well, so I decided to look this up real quick. Check this out. So, will there be a Dune 3? So this was on comicbook.com as of today, actually. Villeneuve has been talking about making Dune into a trilogy since he started working on his adaptation. He's already begun working on a screenplay adapting Dune Messiah alongside some others, and has said that Dune's meaning will only become apparent in the third movie. But here's where it gets a little interesting. Villeneuve sees Dune Messiah similarly. In 2023, he told Variety, Dune Messiah was written in reaction to the fact that people perceived Paul Atreides as a hero, which is not what he wanted to do. My adaptation of Dune is closer to his idea that it's actually a warning. That's kind of interesting. But check this out too. Quote, I'm working on 4 different screenplays, and I know that Dune Messiah will be one of them. I don't know if it will be the next or the second next. My job was to keep the spirit of Frank Herbert alive as much as possible. The whole meaning of Dune becomes clearer with Dune Messiah. Now, when he's saying I'm working on 4 different screenplays, is he talking about, like, there's going to be more than...
No, he's talking about other projects.
Oh, he's
other
movies.
Okay. I'm like, we're going to be getting a bunch of Dune movies. Oh, okay.
Yeah, because from what, like, I have the first 6 Dune books, because those were the ones written by Frank Herbert, and those are the ones that my friend recommended are the best ones. All the other Dune books out there were, like, his son co-authored or wrote it kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he was like, he's like, they're okay, but they're definitely, like, not, like, the original ones. So I've only read the first 3, and let me tell you, like, Children of Dune, even that, I was like, okay, this got weird. Because of my friend listening to Dune, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna reread all of Dune. I just got distracted by Percy Jackson, but it's like, gonna read Dune again. But so it's one of those things that, like, yeah, Dune and Dune Messiah, I'm like, yes, put those on the big screen, that'd be great. Children of Dune, yeah, we don't need to do that one, because that one just, like, weird stuff happened in that was like, okay, that was definitely not a very good sequel.
Well, now I'm kind of curious as to what these weird things are.
Nope.
Pretty much a bad guy that you think is gone comes back and possesses one of the characters, and it's just weird.
Gotcha.
And then one of the other characters, without saying who, because I don't want to spoil it in case you decide to read it. But one of the major character, yeah.
Maybe like somebody listening will.
Yeah, but a major character in Children of Dune, like, forms a symbiotic relationship with the larval stage of the sandworms and becomes a sandworm thing.
Ooh.
Interesting.
Yeah, like he like merges with them, and that's how he becomes like the god of Dune, which leads into the fourth book, which is God Emperor of Doom. It's weird. Yeah, like I said, it was one of those I was like, okay, this is really weird.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's wrap up. Final thoughts on Dune Part 1 or Dune Part 2 coming out soon? Any thoughts on Dune? Anything you're looking forward to?
I have said my piece.
No.
Yeah, I saw the trailer, and I'm going to add the book now, so I can kind of know what to expect. And I like to go through the book before the movie anyway, just to compare and contrast. So yeah, I'm excited about it. That's going to be a big theater one.
Nice.
Yeah, it better come out March 1st, that's for sure, or else Cheka will be going on a rampage.
Oh, this just came out. Dune Part 2 delayed till 2025.
Austin, you're on thin ice, sir.
All right, no, I'm just joking. All right, well, folks, thanks so much for joining us on another adventure of Super Nerd Podcast. Make sure to hit that podcast subscribe button and leave us a review wherever you're listening to us. Subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Anchor, Pocket Cast, or wherever else you find us. Next week, what are we doing next week? We had something planned.
I didn't know what we were doing this week, so you're asking the wrong person.
We're gonna do a 2024 look ahead. We're gonna start going through everything and kind of build out our calendar while we're doing it.
Well, we could do Madam Web. No, Madam Web says the week after. Never mind.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, next week we're gonna be going through the entire nerd calendar of what's going on, movies, TV, everything that you should be paying attention to. But if you want to leave us a voicemail, you can at anchor.fm/supernerdpodcast. You just might be on the upcoming show. You can also email us some thoughts to supernerdpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Search Super Nerd Podcast. Give us a like, give us a share. But from all of us at Super Nerd Podcast, stay nerdy, my friends.
Have fun.
Catch you later.
Bye.
Sorry, I zoned out there.